Today's reading is from Luke chapter 15, verse 11 through 32, the parable of the prodigal and his brother. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the wealth that will belong to me.' So he divided his assets between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant region, and there he squandered his wealth in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that region, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that region, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your assets with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.' Here ends the reading.
Gonna take a sentimental journey. Gonna set my heart at ease. Gonna take a sentimental journey to renew old memories. Anybody remember that song? Do you realize that it was at the height of its popularity 70 years ago? That's before some of us were born. I won't ask for a show of hands. You know, life is full of sentimental journeys. Some of you know that I have just recently, 1 week ago, returned from an epic huaka'i, a sentimental journey, to be sure. Kentucky, Massachusetts, France. Maybe you remember a sentimental journey in your own life, a time when you maybe returned to a special place after being away. And you know, you can be away figuratively as well as geographically, right? Maybe like Pastor David, a sentimental journey is taking the time to experience God's renewing and restorative love in the sights and sounds of another place, even when there are unexpected twists in the plans, maybe especially at those times. I like to think that when we gather for worship in person or online, we are embarking on our own ongoing sentimental journeys closer to God and to one another. So I used to think that the story Tom just read was mostly about that rascally younger son and his sentimental journey going home after a big mess up. But I am coming to discover that everyone in this story seems to be on some kind of a sentimental journey home to their better selves. You know, author Charles Dickens has called this parable the parable of the prodigal son, or I think you called it the prodigal son and the older brother, whatever it said on your paper. Yeah. Charles Dickens calls this parable the greatest story ever written. That's pretty high praise coming from Charles Dickens. Maybe you've also seen some of the famous paintings, Rembrandt, Rubens, and others who felt compelled to depict aspects of this story. Some biblical scholars have suggested that if we truly understand the forgiving father, the troubled younger son, the self-righteous older brother, even the neighbors and community, we will experience the central message of the gospel in a nutshell. So maybe it's time to take a little closer look at the story, perhaps with a little bit more compassion and understanding. Side note, where's the mom? Where are the sisters? Okay, but that's a sermon for another time. So look with me at the younger son. Let's look at him with new eyes. Could it be that he is maybe feeling trapped by the structures of his life and the customs of his culture? Could it be that he doesn't want to wait until his father dies for a chance to live? I wonder, have you ever struggled with waiting your turn? Have you ever felt misunderstood by your family or your boss or maybe even your church? Have you ever felt that your ideas for change or improvement had to wait until the old guard retires or moves away or dies? Like this young man, have you ever acted impulsively to get things moving? I have. I'm not making excuses for the younger son. What he did was pretty shocking. To ask your father for the inheritance is to say out loud that if only he were dead, you could do what you want to do, what you need to do. Impatient, he takes the money and runs, not only to live his dream, but cutting himself off from community, from family, with its support and accountability. And in a distant land, he spends the money and it's good for a while. But as we know, things didn't work out. His fortune vanishes. His dreams turn into a nightmare. His friends disappear. And soon he only feels the shame of defeat and humiliation and hunger. He winds up working as a pig farmer, which is to say he has hit rock bottom. There are lots of little details that I'm kind of skimming over, but working with pigs was not the place that he wanted to be. And he finds himself wishing he could have what the pigs are eating. And the Bible tells us that that's when he came to his senses, or he came to himself. I love that version of the Bible, says that he came to himself. Now there's a sentimental internal journey. He came to himself. Out of desperation, an idea forms. I will return to my village in great humility. I will negotiate with my father. I will ask to be a hired hand. Not a son, but a worker. And maybe he thinks he can earn back a little bit of that self-worth as he is given a chance to prove his change of heart. And so, humiliated and hungry and alone, the son takes a sentimental journey home. And now the parable shifts our attention to the father. But before he is the forgiving, welcoming figure that we've come to admire, think of him at the beginning of the story. Many of us have been right where he was with our own children, torn between holding on and letting go. Doing what we think is best, what we think is in their best interest, or letting our children learn their own hard lessons. This parent, in costly love, gives his ungrateful son the freedom to make his own risky choices. I want to say, wow, was that wise? Was he even a little bit worried or angry? We aren't told. But what we are told is that one day, after a long period of agonizing wondering, the father sees his son in the distance. Even though he probably doesn't look anything like the full of bravado son who left, still, the father sees him. The father recognizes him and begins to run toward him. The father runs. This is no small detail. In full view of the village, maybe even intentionally so, without thought of the humiliation of this appearance, he welcomes and embraces his wayward son. Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you, the son begins, but his carefully prepared speech is cut short as he and everyone around experiences the joy, the amazing grace, and the unconditional love of this parent. But that's not all. This father throws a welcome home party and kills the fatted calf, which will feed some 200 people. It's not going to be a quiet family gathering. The son has been found, and now the whole village must meet him again. The forgiveness and the reconciliation will be public. How I wish the story ended right there, with forgiveness and reconciliation and lessons learned and a party. But it doesn't. Ugh. There's another sentimental journey to be taken, the one involving the elder brother, the responsible one, the reliable one, the one that shows up, the one in this story who is probably the most like you and me. What? Wait. Let's think about this. This one was there from the start. He heard the younger brother's inheritance request. He saw his father give the ultimate freedom. He watched as his father endured personal pain and public humiliation. But you know what? This elder brother was also in the wrong, even before a word is spoken. According to their culture, he should have mediated as the elder brother. It was his kuleana, his responsibility, to act as a go-between. Yet in this family conflict, for whatever reason, he had failed. So in the fields, he continues to work, probably caught between anger at his brother, embarrassment for his father, and maybe a little bit of guilt for his own role in the whole mess. We've been there too, haven't we? Stuck in the middle, between factions. Then comes the day when the older son hears the sounds of celebration. He sees the whole town gathering to party. He is told that it is because his brother is back. Is it any wonder he got angry and stayed away? Forgive me, but I kind of understand this guy. Where is the justice? Where are the appropriate consequences to ensure that the lesson is learned? So when his father seeks him out, makes a sentimental journey to bring even this one home, the father utters these unbelievable words: "Beloved son, you are always with me, and all that I have, all that is mine, is yours. To celebrate and rejoice was necessary, for your brother was dead, and he has come to life. He once was lost, but now is found." And if these words sound somehow familiar, we just sang it. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. You know, some versions change it to soul, because wretch feels a little wretched. But I think when we're looking at this, and the younger son, he probably felt pretty wretched. "I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see." Maybe that's the prayer for the older brother. Friends, why is it so hard for us to get that there is enough love, enough mercy, enough grace to go around? And there, with the words of the father to the elder son, the parable ends suddenly and without resolution. The musicians are waiting. The guests are watching. The servants are poised with food and wine. What will happen next? We don't know. It leaves us hanging. But maybe this is part of the power of this great story, that the next move is ours. Will we act like the older son and righteously decide who is in and who is out and who is worthy of love? but in doing so, remain outside the party? Will we be like the younger son, taking advantage of love, looking for some mindless fun before we take responsibility for our action and our choices? Will we be like the villagers? Have you ever identified with them in this story? The community, ready to jump into the party when all is going well and fatted calf is being served, but crossing our arms or pointing our fingers when we see the problems of others. Maybe Charles Dickens recognized the extravagant, unmerited love of God illustrated in this parable, and I dare say illustrated in the life of this church. A love and a welcome that is offered to all, those who go and those who stay, those who've made mistakes and those who've labored faithfully for many, many years. No matter where you are on the sentimental journey of life, our precious Lord is rushing down the road to catch you up in a bone-crushing hug, to take your hand and lead you home. Amen.